Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
Lyle's got a cold.
A little bit of a cold.
That's his excuse for slurring this time.
Oh, good. I'm glad you guys didn't use up that joke prior to the episode.
This just time a different person said it. Mixed up a little bit.
Hey, man, you can't waste a joke like that.
Even less original. So you guys heard the big news about that AKB48 girl, right?
Jeez, how could you not? Every time I turn on YouTube, it's right there on top.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I haven't actually made it through the video yet. It's just depressing.
Let me see. I'm going to click on YouTube, and it's not on my top. It might be on your top, because you've got, like, AKB48 news.
I'm only subscribed to 3 channels. Come on.
I'm glad someone else is getting it this time, not me. No, I only watched the video after I saw it as a CNN headline. So.
What was CNN saying about it, out of curiosity?
The CNN headline was, "When a teen pop star breaks J-pop Bushido code."
Hmm.
Also, they used a medieval angle like everybody is.
Yes.
You should.
Well, that it was pretty medieval.
So her name is, what's her name, Chris?
What was it? It was...
Minegishi Minami?
Yeah, Minegishi Minami.
Right, and AKB48 has a rule where the girls aren't supposed to date.
Or have a personal life at all.
Or have a boyfriend. And she was seen coming out of a guy's apartment.
Scandalous, I know.
So then she was demoted to one of the trainee teams or one of the regional teams or groups. So she shaved her head and then made a YouTube video crying and apologizing for her indiscretion.
Yeah. I guess it should be pointed out that, you know, shaving your head is considered like a ritual act of penitence, or it kind of shows that you're sorry and that you take your apology seriously.
Except it's not usually done by women.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like when I was talking
about... And it has not usually done in the 21st century.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've known a couple of guys who've done it because they've screwed up at work.
Yeah, like,
really?
That's what my girlfriend said. Like, that's kind of when it happens. And me being a guy and not having watched the video when I had the discussion, I'm like, oh, well, that doesn't sound, you know, that bad. But then, yeah, it came up on CNN and I watched the video and I'm like, oh my God, she looks terrible. That is absolutely dreadful. You know how, you ever hear how Brad Pitt shaved his own head for 12 monkeys to give himself that crazy look?
Guess who also succeeded that?
Yeah. That's what it looked like. It looked like that Brad Pitt's character from 12 Monkeys shaved this poor girl's head. Yeah. Like, it's uneven and patchy, and she does not have an attractively shaped skull.
I never thought that she was very cute to begin with, but, yeah.
Hey, hair did a lot for her.
Yeah, but Chris is right. She didn't really have far to fall.
No, but that little bit really did it. Anyway. I feel bad for saying that comment.
It's interesting, though. Like, the reason I was asking about CNN is, I didn't actually read through any articles, but a lot of the headlines I saw were pretty scathing towards, like, Japanese culture. You know, this poor girl, she's an adult, so she should be able to have whatever kind of sex life she wants. How dare they do this? But on Japanese media, it was the complete opposite. My wife was watching a TV show about it last night, and all the people on it were just saying, man, how horrible of this girl, how selfish she is to put up a video like this and bring dishonor on her group and on the boy and make it all about her. And yeah, it's like people are pissed off at her over here.
Really?
Yeah.
For having a life and shaving her head. Sorry, I don't see that one.
No, it's more that, well, on the one hand, it's kind of the that she agreed to these terms with AKB, so who is she to go out violate them and then try and get around them by making a crying video? But more to it is that from what I was hearing last night, everyone was angry at her for being selfish. You know, this, she should take her licks and do what she, what the company says she should do. She shouldn't try and make a video and make herself stand out like that.
Well, do they not realize that the company told her to make that video?
Did they?
I don't think she made it on her own.
I hadn't heard that one way or the other, but everyone that was talking last night seemed to be under the impression that they didn't, that she made it on her own.
No.
No, she was, told to do it. Huh. That's what I think.
Okay.
I don't doubt that. Like, I was also trying to see whether or not she was told to shave her head or whether she did that on her own, and I don't think she would have done that on her own. So.
I don't know. It sounds logical what you're saying, but. I haven't heard anything, so.
Yeah, when have Logic and Japan ever gone together?
Hey-oh!
Yeah, I reckon if I was her or her manager, I'd go with it, you know? Get rid of AKB48 and go with a bad girl image, try a solo thing. Because she was one of the top girls, one of the most popular ones.
Really?
Well, so it sounded like, I don't know.
But if she goes it on her own, she won't have the backup of, her 79 other singing bad member. So you'll be able to peg exactly who the bad one is.
They can't in terms sing, of singing. Can they?
No, that's
none
exactly
of
what
of
I
them
mean.
Can sing.
Yeah, I think when one of them retired, one of the kind of reasonably pretty ones, and then she did a duet with this other girl, and you're just like, oh, this is so terrible.
It's so weird, though.
You need, 47 others shouting over you, kind of drown out.
But that's Japan. I mean, one of the biggest groups here for the last, 30 years is SMAP, and they can't carry a tune to save their lives. I mean, all they're hired for is because they're good-looking and are funny when they go on TV shows.
They're not even good-looking.
Well, that's a judgment.
One of them. One of them is attractive.
I don't know. Kusanagi-kun, he's got that big coffin-shaped head.
Rough.
So yeah, that's just Japanese culture. They're there for entertainment value more than their ability to sing or dance.
Or be human, apparently.
You said that, not me.
Yeah, I did.
All right, so some really exciting news for us personally is,
I shaved my head! Yeah!
Yeah, I shaved my head too, yeah.
That'll be the day, yeah.
How's that exciting? Yeah. Is, the Cortex Kickstarter, Cortex Plus Hacker's Guide, is now, as we speak, and it'll be finished by the time this uploads, but is over $37,000. Yeah, $2,500 more, it hits the $40,000 stretch goal. So that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, hopefully by the time this uploads, they'll have hit that stretch goal. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I'm really interested to see the quote-unquote generic stuff they roll out. That's what the stretch goal is, that generic action system.
Yeah. So we've already hit the dramatic role-playing, the generic version of the dramatic role-playing, which comes from Smallville.
Yes, mm-hmm. I believe so.
And action role-playing comes from Leverage.
Right.
And we've already unlocked the fantasy heroic role-playing, which comes from Marvel heroic role-playing, and the double content.
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased. This book is
shaped
up
to be a monster. Rival the Pathfinder book. Maybe.
Not a chance. Nothing beats Pathfinder.
Hero. From what I hear, Hero 6th edition could stop a bullet.
Really?
It's like a freaking phone book.
Oh, it's funny because Champions is pretty, the latest Champions is fairly slim.
Maybe that's right. Champions was always famous for being a monstrous book too, hey?
That was a well-made book. Like, really well-made binding.
Steel-plated.
Pretty beefy hardcover. And, I mean, what it was is like, you know, the black and white non-regular paper.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that it's not going to pull on the bindings as much.
Mm.
So I really like what Catalyst Games does with their books. They're beautiful, a lot of material, but the paper is really, really, really heavy.
Oh.
So I don't know how long those bindings can hold that paper in. So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Anyway. All right, for binder talk. And,
Shaved heads and bindings.
Yeah. Next, we'll talk about drilling holes in the spine and, stitching it with sinew or something. Hold it together.
Where did that come from?
Binding. The binding.
Yeah. You buy some weird books, dude.
All right. Hey, it's not my fault I got a Necronomicon on my shelf. It was just there.
After a flash of light. Let's move on.
Yep, and a flat joke.
Well, today we decided to do an episode on prequels. A couple of us just watched the Thing prequel, which was called what? Sorry.
I think it was just called The Thing.
The Thing.
Yeah. No, it is called The Thing.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And it's a prequel of The Thing.
The Thing.
You know, I'm going to say right off the bat, if you're doing a prequel, I don't make it obvious that it's a prequel. Call it something different.
The Thing, the first.
The first thing.
I thought it was a pretty decent movie, and compared to some of the other prequels that will come up during this episode, like, Star Wars, I thought it really did a good job setting up the original movie. You know, at the end of the thing, you kind of went, oh, okay, I see where the next one is going to start. I see the threads that connect it. And, yeah, I thought it was a great example of a well-done prequel.
Hmm.
But, like, watching the movie, and I'm a huge fan of the original thing, or the John Carpenter thing, and you're watching it, and you're pretty excited to watch it, because you know it is building up to one of my favorite movies, but on the other hand, you also know what's going to happen.
Right.
So it kind of made me wonder, you know, how much value are you getting out of a prequel? And if you did something like a prequel in a game, how much value would that add? Would that kind of, would that actually be an exciting thing, an interesting thing, or would it be boring because people already know the ending?
Or would it be a monster thing? All right.
Sorry, what?
You kept saying, would it be an interesting thing? Would it be a boring thing? And I just kept thinking, no, it would just be the thing.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
Not worth it.
Did not get that at all.
I got it, but I thought it'd be funnier if I didn't make any noise afterwards.
Yeah, all right. Well, and this is going to sound wishy-washy. I think that depends, because...
All right, well, thanks. That's it for the episode.
All right, could I finish
my point?
It really
just depends on...
But sometimes you either watch a movie or you read a book or you know, there's a story, and the setup is interesting enough where you say, I want to see how this happened. I know the result because I've read this book now. And I want to know what happened. Like, a good example is the Horace Heresy books that you lent me, Lyle. So, you know, anyone who knows Warhammer 40,000 lore knows that Horace betrays the Emperor and starts this huge, you know, schism between the Space Marine companies. And I kind of, when you lent me the books, I kind of thought, well, I already know what happened. You know, how interesting is this going to be? And the first three books, that was a great trilogy. I really enjoyed that because we knew the result, but we didn't know how it came about. And it was fun to kind of watch the pieces fall into place to set that up.
Cool.
And that's a really good example of doing a prequel right. So what we're going to do today is talk about the potential pitfalls in doing a prequel game. And the opportunities that a prequel game can present. Just have some common frames of references. We'll be referring to like prequels like The Horus Heresy or The Thing or Gods of the Arena. Normally we have a pretty strict spoiler policy, but we're going to say because these are prequels, we're going to be a little bit more relaxed on our spoiler policies. So if you hear us name something that you haven't seen yet, then kind of skip ahead. And so, I mean, what are some of the pitfalls in a prequel?
Well, we should take a look at Star Wars because it fell into a lot of them.
Glad someone else said that, not me. I've bashed on Star Wars enough, the prequels.
You know, I don't hate on the prequels as much as a lot of other people I've heard, but yeah, they made a lot of mistakes. For example, don't dig yourself too much in a hole as far as trying to get every single detail and every single storyline that you've presented in the original story and try to build it into the prequel for that. Choose what's going to be the most interesting, what's going to be the most necessary, and put those in. And don't trap yourself. Just because Anakin used to be a nice guy at one point, you don't have to make him to a really super cute kid. That kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. Yeah, like if you're going to do a prequel in a game, maybe just choose one or two of the storylines that you want to explore. Because, yeah, Star Wars is a good example where, or to me, it felt like they just kind of chucked stuff in so that we were like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Like, what was that scene between Chewbacca and Yoda at the end? You know, like, if that was the case, hey, somebody knows where Yoda is and...
That he's still alive, yeah.
And he's still alive. And how come Chewie never said, hey, you're going to see Yoda. I know who that guy is, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, that was a big pitfall. So... As you said, Chris, don't try and cram absolutely everything into the prequel. just because people might want to see it or because you think it's interesting or it has to be there.
I think one of the big mistakes of Star Wars, excluding, of course, Jar Jar Binks, which was the biggest mistake of Star Wars, was probably the love story between Padme and Anakin. It's just that, you know, the story is about Anakin and how he became Darth Vader. And to put in that love story, I think Lucas bit off more than he could chew with the screenwriting aspect of it. It's just he had to build this child growing up and falling in love and then going from that, all the way into, you know, this twisted Darth Vader. Yeah, and it was just too much for three movies. At least it was too much for three movies and a whole bunch of lightsaber fights.
Right.
In between.
Right. Well, also, I was going to say.
Too much for three movies. I don't know. I agree with the point. Is like, yeah, pick your stories. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're doing a game, and we'll keep it as a science fiction game, and you keep mentioning the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if you drop it a couple times, people are going to be interested in that. So that's the story you want to tell. Just up to the, you know, so just start at the Clone Wars or right up to the Clone Wars.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, it seems kind of ridiculous that, you know, we didn't get that much of the Clone Wars in the prequels.
I think that was intentional, though, because they wanted to do the TV series afterwards, and that was all about the Clone Wars.
I guess so. The point that I brought up is really good, where, like, you're not going to do that in a game, because you're not going to say, hey, after I finish this prequel, how about another campaign that fits in between the prequel and the other game, you know? So, just pick, like, an event, like the Clone Wars. Like, there doesn't have to be any characters from the original game or the original story in that prequel game or story, just so long as the event you kept referencing is explored a little bit.
Yeah, and I think another thing to take away is that here we are talking about a prequel trilogy, and maybe that's part of the problem. I mean, you say that there wasn't enough time to develop those characters, but we kind of already knew what point B was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So maybe we didn't necessarily have to go all the way at the beginning of point A.
Yeah.
And in a prequel, the players are going to know, like, where they're going. If you're doing, like, a true prequel right up to the time that they left, right?
Right.
Then you want to keep that pretty tight and pretty focused. If you want to have a completely different game set in the past with different characters, and that's, in a sense, that's like Horus Heresy.
Right.
Because it is
right.
Kind of set, like, 1,000 years in the past or something like that.
Pretty substantially, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're playing the characters of Legend. So we could say it's a prequel because it has a lot of good things to take away there, but you're also kind of playing completely different people. You're playing the legends of the past.
Yeah.
So kind of know what kind of prequel you're playing and plan accordingly. And if it is pretty contemporary, then something short, tight, just to kind of answer some questions or to kind of give yourself a break from the current campaign.
I was wondering how this would work, and you bringing up the scope of time, Lyle, I guess this is a good time to talk about it. I'm thinking if your prequel is not that far away from where your original game picked up, and as you said, the players have a goal, they kind of know where the end point of this prequel story is going to be, I tend to worry that you might end up railroading the characters. Or just the nature of the story will railroad the characters. And you want to give them free will in the game, but that also, you know, provides a lot of opportunity to affect the game in ways that weren't shown in the original, if I'm making my point clear.
No, absolutely. I think that actually is, for me, the biggest pitfall that you can run into in this kind of games is that you have a finish point that that everyone expects to get to. And how do you get to that point while still having a free, open game? I mean, you can, granted, all your players can agree that, you know, at a certain time they'll go to the certain place, but it kind of takes away from, you know, just letting a game unfold in front of you and, you know, taking it where it needs to be taken to tell a good story.
I was thinking of, I forget the exact Leverage episode, but Leverage isn't the only show to do that. A lot of shows seem to do that, where, you know, they'll start the TV show, there'll be a little scene, and then they'll say, you know, like 48 hours previously, or 12 hours previously. And it's getting a bit cliche, so I tend to roll my eyes when I see those episodes now. But I think maybe that's a way you could do it, like, yeah, as you said, Chris, your players know where the end point is, and they know that at, you know, 5 p.m. on this date, they're all going to have to meet in this, you know, certain place, because that's where the original story picked up. Mm-hmm. And I think players might actually police themselves a little bit. You know, they might not go too far afield because they know that things kind of have to wrap up in a way that would pick up in the original story.
Yeah, I agree, but I wonder if that's not the thing that might take down the tone of the game a little bit, in that everyone knows that they have to finish in this city, so maybe they're afraid to ever venture out of the city. And not afraid, but maybe less willing than they normally would be.
Mm, yeah.
That said, though, like, I have actually tried a game like you said there with Leverage, where you start off with one scene and then you go back in time and play up to that scene before, and it worked really well, so.
No, I don't think there's any way to avoid it if you're doing something that goes up to the story,
right? Mm-hmm.
Of railroading your players, unless it's something. I mean, that was one of the things that was kind of great, but not so great about the thing is that, like, Wayne actually saw it before me, and he was going, "Oh yeah, and you can see where the axe is, and that's
right,
explained."
Right.
And you mm-hmm. know, and I was kind of thinking, I kind of didn't really need to hear that story or know that story. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching it, it's almost like, you know, they've got like those little, those dance steps on the floor, and they're just kind of walking on those paper feet.
Right, right.
So maybe if you have something like, you know, some character has like become, just use a vampire example, they become the prince of the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and tell that story. How do they become the prince of the city? And there actually are no real details other than at the end, this vampire has to be the prince of the city.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different routes you could take to mitigate that kind of railroading. You could tell the backstory of the players, how they got to be the heroes that they started off your last campaign in, and you don't have to go right up to the point where the last campaign began. That gives you quite a bit more freedom. You can tell the story of the villain for that, and maybe not even use the characters at all. Just take up powerful or important NPCs in the last game. But I think using the thing as an example, that one might be really tough to do because, you know, at the end of, this is going to be a spoiler, by the way, at the beginning of the original thing, everyone in that outpost is dead. So at the end of the remake of the thing, everyone has to die. So your players can't succeed. If they're playing in that situation, they can't escape. They're going to die. And granted, if everyone's on board with that, that can be a lot of fun, but, you know, it's a limitation that you have to accept before going into it.
True. And just to use the thing, and again, sort of, sorry, no spoilers, not everybody has to die, just no one can be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you go back and you find the outpost, it's abandoned, okay, you find all these dead bodies. Well, you don't really know how many people were there. Maybe some of them actually escaped, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but yeah, I think a horror game like The Thing is kind of a special case where, yeah, hey, this movie starts with pretty much everybody dead. So
mm-hmm.
your players know, yeah, we're pretty much going to be dead. That might be a pitfall too, especially in like a horror game, because if you think about Call of Cthulhu, most games end up with the player characters either dead or insane.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of lose. But at least they kind of beat the monster, hopefully,
yeah.
You know? In a prequel game like The Thing, they don't even have that victory, because if they completely defeat the monster, there would have been no original movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So not only do their characters die, they also don't beat the monster. So that would kind of be a downer.
Well, you know, I didn't think of it before, but actually that's a good point, Wayne. If you're doing a prequel of characters and one of them dies, what do you do?
Well, I kind of did that a little bit in the Changeling game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the player characters got injured, and I just had an NPC there specifically to heal people up.
In that flashback.
Yeah, in that flashback, so that the player characters wouldn't die. And I guess that's another pitfall, too. If you're using the same characters in a prequel, the players know that their characters can't die.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I would probably avoid using the same characters.
Yeah, good advice, yes.
Yeah.
But I would tell a story that's not necessarily leading directly up to a finite ending or something. I would do the like a very broad goal of, you know, this person became king or something like that. How did they become king?
Mm-hmm.
Or you solve a mystery where, like, let's say you walked into going back to the thing, and they go into the base and they just found the dead people. Now, people who have seen the beginning of the thing know they were kind of pushed to do that when the helicopter, the Norwegian helicopter, came chasing that dog.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they knew something was up. But let's say you walk into a room and there's blood everywhere and there are some bodies there, but you can't recognize who the bodies are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could back up and tell that story because there actually could be some survivors.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened, and that could actually dovetail into the main story. So there's actually a reason to tell it, and the players are playing maybe new characters and they don't know which one of them. They know three of them are going to die because they figured out there's three bodies, but there's actually five of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So who dies? Is it all five of us and the other ones were the bodies were taken away, or are two of us going to survive? And if we do survive, what are we doing now? Why aren't we?
Yeah, why aren't we there? Yeah.
That can actually kind of amplify the mystery.
Yeah, you saying that now really makes me think that, and I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a mystery, and you know, maybe it's not so important to the original story. It's just like, oh, that's really creepy, and we knew these guys had done all these things, but you know, oh, by the way, what happened to them?
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, the thing is a good example in that where they go to that base, and you know, you don't really need that. It was great that they go back, and oh, there is a problem. But the main story is back on the American base.
Right.
And then you tell that story well, it wasn't even completion. It ends on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back and you think, oh, that's really kind of interesting. And it's like, oh, but it's really kind of, you're just going to play it right up to the end. And we kind of know that that's the thing and everything. And, you know.
Yeah.
But I did kind of suck it away. But if there's kind of like a more open ending.
Mm. I was going to say, I think maybe something to take away here is, probably the less details you're working with, the better. You know, as you said, Lyle, all you have is, you know, this person achieves this goal, but you don't really know how, and you don't know who else they interacted with to get there, and all that is open.
Yeah, I think I might disagree with you a little bit there, Wayne, in that it's not so much details, but plot points that you have to hit. The fewer of those that are necessary, I suppose, gives you more freedom to play with. But I think details are one of the things that can make a prequel game really, really interesting. You know, if you take points of interest and details and maybe hints and foreshadowings of things that happened in the original campaign and then drop them into the prequel, you get that kind of, oh, cool, that thing, nostalgia factor from the people who are playing the prequel. And I think that is one of the most fun things that you can do with a story like this.
I suppose, but again, using the thing, that's kind of what Lyle was talking about. You know, in the original movie, you see the axe buried in the wall. You see, like, you see the pit where the charred body was. Mm-hmm. You see the frozen body in the chair with the radio. You see the blood splatter on the wall. And then the new version of the thing, you see how all that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of realize why it's there. And I had the same reaction too. I'm like, oh, cool. Now we know why that axe is there. But, then, as Lyle said, did you really need to know? And in a movie, you can set that up pretty easily because you have complete control of everything.
Right.
You can't really do that in a game.
You're absolutely right. And I think you have to kind of draw a line between what things you can do and what things you can't do. For example, the body frozen in the chair like that. It's going to be really hard to get a player to sit down in that chair.
Now stay here until you freeze.
Exactly. You know, the same thing with a body in the pit. You know, these kinds of things to show a specific way or a specific location that somebody died and not give any kind of hint that it might have been somewhere else or for some other cause can really paint yourself into a corner. But if you have something that's quite a bit more vague, for example, the axe in the wall, there's a lot of different ways that axe can get there. And so that gives you a way to link it to the original story that people can grasp onto and say, oh, that's cool. But also it doesn't trap you into having somebody to sit down in that horrible, horrible chair.
I suppose. I guess getting away from the thing. You saying all that made me think of, you know, Spartacus: Gods of the Arena,
mm-hmm.
where the first Spartacus series, you hear stories or characters name drop, you know, other characters who we haven't seen, mm-hmm. and you get a little bit of their backstory, and then Spartacus: Gods of the Arena, we actually get to see those characters in action, and we get to find out more of their story, and I really liked that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, we talked about Gods of the Arena, and unfortunately, the actor playing Spartacus, Andy Whitfield, got sick, and he was fighting cancer at the time. And, of course, they were really hoping, as you would, that he would pull through and that they could continue with the next season. So what they did is they went back and they made a prequel while they were waiting for him to do his treatment. Unfortunately, he passed away. And with his blessing, they continued and made the next season anyway with the replacement. But then it meant that, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, we want to make, you know, six or so episodes, and what stories are we going to tell? But they'd, like Wayne said, there was like a few things that they could have done. You know, they had two guys that were rivals now, so they could tell how do these guys become rivals.
Right.
And they do a switch by having them start as friends. So imagine doing that to your players. It's like, these are your enemies, and then they go and play these characters, and you're like, by the way, you're friends. And you're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that might be interesting, is that they've got to somehow work it where by the end of the story, they've become rivals somehow.
You know, that's a really good point there, Lyle. I hadn't thought of that, because, you know, I was saying before with the example of Star Wars that you have a character who's defined to be a good person at the beginning and has to be an evil person at the end, and you get stuck trying to point your path along there. But actually, now that you say that, it could be a really fun time trying to figure out as a player, how to get your character to turn that way. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, no, I think in that respect, like Star Wars, like how he becomes good, like how he turns to the dark side is pretty good, and there's a lot of freedom there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Making him the best fighter, pilot, that's okay, but then as like Wayne's saying, as a caution, you're now adding a detail, so be careful there, you know, because you've added, okay, you've got to turn bad, now that's kind of a goal. And now you're saying he's a great pilot. Okay, so we're adding some details, which is not terribly new, because we knew Darth Vader's a good pilot. And was he a good pilot? He kind of.
I was just going to argue that point. It's like Anakin Skywalker didn't seem like that good of a pilot to me in the prequels. Just like, well, okay.
In the original movies, I think it was Obi-Wan, but I don't remember exactly. But somebody did say that Anakin was a great pilot.
No, that's what I'm
saying.
Did,
and then, but then we should have seen it also in Darth Vader's piloting. But I guess he was okay compared to.
That's what I meant. Like, nowhere in the prequels did I think, man, Anakin is really showing how great of a pilot he is.
Oh, you saw that pod race?
Oh, please.
He has Jedi reflexes.
Bro, my midichlorians. Yeah.
Right. Well, so there's another detail that you're adding. So you just got to be careful there. But like, I think a broad goal could be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I think in that case, if you're going to do like a character arc, it would probably help for the GM and the players, or the players, to set like a time limit. You know, mentioning Gods of the Arena, they were going to do 6 episodes. And so they kind of had to show that in 6 episodes. They had to show that those character arcs, and they kind of had to, you know, wrap up the story to where Spartacus Blood and Sand picked up. And I think you should give your players the same notice, because if they don't know how long they have until these two characters are supposed to go from friends to enemies, you know, I could see the session starting off and like, okay, let's fight right now. And you're like, whoa, 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 where did that come from? I've still got like...
He's into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Your mother was a hamster.
Yeah, I've still got like 4 or 5 more sessions planned. It's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I think that would definitely be a time where you would want to sort of not plan out what happens in the arc, but plan out a time span for it. Say, at the end of 6 sessions, this prequel is going to wrap up. So, sometime in there, you guys are going to have a falling out. Yeah, yeah.
You know, timelines can be really great. No, sorry, not timelines, but deadlines, or, you know, set number of episodes, set number of sessions can be really good to add to the tension. Yeah. And also, there's a good example of somebody who got injured, and it's a leg injury.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't exactly know how it happens. So that can add a little bit of tension, whereas, like, this particular chair, whoever sits there will freeze to death. You know, is a bad example, but that's a pretty decent example of like some tension that could arise from kind of knowing what the fate is.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about that, that'd be interesting. In a game system that uses hindrances or defects or something like that, if you're playing the same character, maybe you're playing that character without those defects, and sometime during the prequel, you acquire them. And it's an interesting story figuring out how you get them. You know, if you choose, like, lame defects or, like, lame hindrances, well, then the story's not going to be very interesting.
I was just thinking of the hindrance youth. How do I acquire that?
Well, yeah, I was thinking that one, too. You're like, okay. So I was an old man first. Hey, Benjamin, there you go. Solved.
Actually, I just thought of an interesting caveat for that freezing chair that we keep going back to. If you played that in a kind of sci-fi game where this chair is like the piloting chair for the ship, so somebody has to sit in that chair at some point in order for the game to continue. You know that somebody is going to sit in that chair at some point and die, but you still can't avoid sitting in that chair, so you take turns. It's like musical chairs in your game.
Yeah, well, I don't really think that worked for the thing, since they were just operating a radio.
Yeah, probably not.
But there are some great disadvantages out there, like Dark Secret. Chris, you're a big fan of Savage Worlds. It has something like that. No, that's kind of fatalistic or something.
Oh, Death Wish.
Death Wish. No, it's like you're going to die thing.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but that's kind of the reverse. Like World of Darkness, yeah, you get like a Dark Secret or something like that. And how did you acquire that Dark Secret? Mm. Or Bad Reputation? How did you acquire that?
I think that'd be kind of fun to play.
Yeah. Totally.
Or then you have like a nemesis or an enemy. All right, let's tell it. The danger there is, of course, if you have more than one player, you don't want to make it just about, okay, now we're going to tell Paul's story. You're right. Like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, you know, for me, I think that's one of the most interesting ways of doing a prequel, at least intriguing. That's what I'd like to try, is the story of the bad guy. And for the Star Wars prequels, that was, I think, the most interesting storyline in there, at least for me, is how the Emperor gained power. And I think that just would make a really cool game.
He did it pretty, like, he wasn't all that sneaky, he's just, the rest of the Senate seemed pretty dumb.
Yeah. I mean, he was probably one of the best actors in the movies, again, in my humble opinion.
That's not a lot. That's not a big compliment.
That's true, yeah. Right? But I quite enjoyed the Emperor's part of the story.
Mm.
Except at the end. Unlimited power!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it kind of reminds me, like, we were talking before the episode about whether Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was a prequel to Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And even though technically it is, I think if we had seen some character development in Indiana Jones, I would be more apt to call it a prequel. You know, there's that flashback scene in The Last Crusade where we finally find out why he's afraid of snakes.
Yeah.
And if that had been at the beginning of Temple of Doom, I would tend to call it a prequel more, because, we figured something out about him that we knew in the original but didn't know the reason for.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually have to admit, I had no idea that Temple of Doom was a prequel.
No, neither did I until you said it.
Yeah. So, according to George Lucas, he said that he put it in between The Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark, because he wanted to give Indiana a more human side, where he's actually helping out the kids because he wants to help out kids rather than just going for artifacts or adventure or whatnot. But I don't know. George Lucas also claimed that he wrote all of Star Wars before he started the first movie, which I don't believe either. So
I also didn't really get that from Indiana Jones that much. I mean, he still wanted those, you know, jewels a lot. The kids just kind of seemed like an added benefit.
But, you know, actually, I was reading on a blog online, Indiana Jones might be a good example of how you can do a prequel, because in the Indiana Jones movies, Indiana Jones doesn't make any difference at all. If he didn't exist, then the movie would have gone the exact same way. The Nazis would have still gotten the Ark, they would have still opened it, they would have still gone to the caves to try and find the Holy Grail, they still would have drank the wrong Holy Grail. Nothing would have changed in the storyline if Indiana hadn't been there.
You just ruined that trilogy for me.
That was actually the name of the blog, How to Ruin This Movie. But, I think that's, I don't know, you might kind of take some of the glory away from your players if you ran it like that, but, I mean, that's maybe something to keep in mind if you're planning to do a prequel, is that you can make the future inevitable. An example I was thinking about earlier when we were talking is maybe an apocalypse. If you do a post-apocalyptic game, how fun would it be to do the story that led up to the apocalypse?
Oh, like Rift's released a game like that.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that, yeah.
Rift, Chaos Earth.
I'm sure a lot of people forgot about it since it was Rift.
Including Palladium.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, even though part of doing a prequel is you know what's going to happen. Well, I suppose you were playing a post-apocalyptic game. So there is something after the apocalypse. So then I could kind of see playing it. But I was thinking of, you know, that the horror prequel for The Thing where everybody's going to die and you can't stop the apocalypse. So why are we playing? This game sucks. But there's stuff after it. Mm-hmm. I could do it. I guess it's kind of like, it would have been like if, you know, the Road Warrior, no, that was the first one, wasn't it? It would kind of be like if Mad Max was the first one and Road Warrior second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the first time. Mad Max explains why the Road Warrior is the way it is.
Yeah. So it's kind of like if...
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, if they had done those in the reverse order, it would have been, you know... But never mind. Just cut that section out.
No, keep this. Yeah,
if we're keeping my t-shirt, we're keeping that.
All right, fine. Screw you guys. Move on.
Oh. No, it's like, well, what if you suggested The Hobbit as a prequel? But he actually wrote The Hobbit before.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really a prequel. It's kind of the...
It's just chapter
the beginning.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I read the prequel to the Sword of Shannara series. So it's the first King of Shannara.
Did you actually finish that?
Yeah, no, I finished. Right. Yeah.
Did you continue with the series?
No.
Alright.
Yeah, it's like, it was, yeah, I don't know.
Bust out that thesaurus for interesting, Lyle.
Now, what's the opposite? What's the antonym? No, it just, yeah, it kind of suffered from what a prequel could is like, well, you know, this guy is going to survive, the bad guy's going to survive, and this guy's got the sword, but I guess it's not going to do much because it's going to come up again
in the
next
book.
Yeah, because, you know, all right. And he even said, well, I didn't tell him, but, you know, I don't mind spoiling this, but I didn't tell him, but he didn't actually kill the bad guy. And you're like, nah, oh, okay. But he's like, lets everybody believe, you know.
Right.
Oh, yeah, he's dead. Yeah, Rocket.
I've heard advice other places, you know, in, I guess one of the problems of role-playing games is you put the bad guy in front of the players, and there's always the chance that they could kill him. You know, mm-hmm. if you're sort of playing fair as a GM, and then what happens next? You know, you had all this kind of stuff planned, but now your villain's dead, and how do you do that? So a lot of the advice is, you don't let the player see the villain until the end.
Yeah. That was actually an idea that I'd had earlier is if you have, for example, a big bad in your original game, so you go into the prequel, I say introduce the big bad to the next game at the very end and tie it in with the game. Like maybe the heroes save this village at the very end of the prequel's campaign. And they find out right at the end of the game that one of the people who they saved in this village actually turns out to be the big bad in the next series. I love twist endings in games, so that's where I was going with that. But.
Well, way to kind of steal my point. All right. But I was going to say, I think the same thing goes for a prequel because sort of how can I say this? Introducing stuff that needs to be canon for the original game too early in the prequel provides a lot of opportunity for that to get messed up. So I would say if something kind of has to happen, put it at the end of the prequel game so there's less time for that to screw.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking, just to follow up on that, it kind of makes me think that the game master should have, like, two kind of goals for that game. The goal that all the other players know. It's like, you know, you guys are going to have a falling out or let's find out about the Dark Secret or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have your secret goal. And that could be, like Chris said, or Wayne, you know, you both said it. the main villain from the main story is going to be introduced as kind of a benevolent or benign NPC, and they might even save them. And then they kind of now have to agonize that they actually caused all those problems from the main story. But that's like your secret goal is that you want to drop that in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the story you really want to tell, but the players think, oh, we want to tell how that village got burned down. That's the story we're telling.
Well, if it's a game of D&D, very easy. How did that village get burned down? Oh, yeah, we were here yesterday.
Well, it's like the Star Wars prequels was, you know, everybody thinks it was the story of Anakin turning into Darth Vader, but the real story was like, hey, how did C-3PO get made? That's all George Lucas wanted. He's like, yeah, that was my whole thing.
Oh, man, boring story ever. It was built by a kid. Oh, really?
Lucas!
Yeah.
He wanted to answer, where are all the black people in the Star Wars universe?
Oh, jeez.
Oh,
they all escaped to Cloud City, because that's the only place you see him, I think.
Oh, there's some Maoris in the prequels.
That's right.
Yeah.
Boba Fett.
Yeah, and I was saying, then you look at the original.
Dad. Yeah, what's that?
Dad, Dad.
Boba Fett. Boba Fett.
Yeah, Boba Fett.
He's no good to me, dude. You have 6 guards.
I love you're almost going Jamaican with that. Veda, he's no good to me, my dead man.
I know. He calls full on Kiwi. But, cheers, bro. Cheers, bro. Just load up in the back, eh? Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Thank you.
Sorry.
But I guess, you know, we've been talking about all the different kinds of ideas and pitfalls and advice, but we haven't really gotten to the main question. Why would you want to run a prequel?
Well, I guess I'll use the Horus Heresy books again, where, for me, I would want to run a prequel game where something interesting got either brought up or briefly explored in the main game, and thinking, oh, okay, that sounds really interesting, that sounds really awesome. Maybe there's not enough time to explore it now, mm-hmm. but it'll be cool to go back and figure out what happened. Like, this is going to sound weird, but when I ran those Dungeon World games over the winter break, I had all these sort of setup questions, you know, to sort of get the session moving and kind of put people right in the fiction. And one of the questions was how this sort of like evil Ice Witch escaped and how she had been defeated the first time, a long time ago. And I ran that, I think, 3 times, and I got 3 different and very interesting answers. And afterwards, I thought, well, it would be kind of cool to go back and find out how they did that. You know, like the setup that I was given, yeah, seemed really cool and interesting, and it was kind of like, okay, that's a little piece of the lore, L-O-R-E, lore, of this world. And in the future, we could actually go into the past and play a prequel game of that. Like, you know what the end result is. You have to beat this person. But it would still be interesting finding out how they do that.
That's why'd really cool.
Sorry, why'd you spell lore?
Yeah, I was going to ask that same thing. What's the other way to spell it? L-O-A-R?
No.
We thought you said allure?
No, lore. I don't know. I just thought I didn't pronounce it very clearly. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Ah, I see.
Oh, yeah, I did think you said roar.
I would really want to experience more about the roar of this setting.
Yeah, this is my improper pronunciation of LOL, roar.
I think that would be quite a curveball, is you start as lions. What? So how do you become human? I mean, we want to tell the story.
Yeah, that's an awesome prequel. Okay, you have to find out, yeah, how you become human.
Jeez.
So to boil it down, Wayne, basically you're saying is that you had played a really interesting setting or story and you want to go back and expand upon that. That's kind of the main point of the prequel for you?
I guess so. It doesn't even have to be the whole piece of the setting or the story in its entirety. Just mm-hmm. one little thing, you know, where you say, ah, oh, there's more here than we have time to explain. Let's find out what that is.
Cool. Very cool.
I think a reason to run a prequel is just kind of maybe your main story has hit a lull.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple ways. I mean, you could continue on and do a new adventure, but maybe you don't want to tell the story with the same characters, which you like the world. And it's a way to go back. And, you know, sometimes like in the Horus Heresy, you can tell the story of the legends
mm-hmm.
that led to the overall, like the grand condition of the world.
Hmm.
Or there could be like a minor little mystery and you can go back and tell that story with different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be just a way for your players, if you don't mind the obvious pitfall of, you know, they've got to survive, of the players going back and playing low-level characters again.
Yeah, yeah. That can be a lot of fun. That's some of the best parts of a lot of games, starting low and going high. For me, I really... One of my favorite parts of running a game is telling a story. And I mentioned it before, but I really love doing twist endings. And running a prequel has a really great storytelling potential in that the events of the original game are given emotional weight just by the players having experienced them firsthand, being part and of that story and making that story. So if you do a prequel well and it ties together into the original game, either through the details or through the events of the plot, it can just be a really exciting game for the players. It can be a wonderful ending to it, and I'm all about cool endings on the game. So, yeah, in fact, to the point where almost I might run a prequel without telling people and hope that they realize it at the end. But, yeah, for me, the storytelling opportunities, that's the main reason I think I would try one.
Could you do a prequel without people knowing? I mean, you could do it if they're not playing the same characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I meant. For, like we said before, where maybe the players save a village and it turns out that one of the people in the village is the big bad in another game. Or, again, like the example of we play a post-apocalyptic game and the prequel is leading up to that apocalypse.
I could see that, especially in like a sci-fi game, because after doing the Eclipse Phase episode, remember we got the comment from Tachi about how he started his game before the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you could actually do that, and you could play the same characters, actually, without... I guess you would know if you're playing the same character. But
Eclipse Phase is about the only game where you might be able to get away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was thinking that because you could technically die and be, like, you know, rebooted slightly differently or reinstated differently, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. That might be the only game where you could do that.
Well, no, but that also makes me think is, like, sometimes, yeah, a game is set in a particular setting, and you might want to play the default setting, but then some of them do have a very interesting history. And after you've kind of, like, the players have played in the core setting, probably, which is the thing that's, like, easiest for them to grasp, then it's much easier to go back and tell, like, more of a historical adventure.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, but look at Battlestar Galactica, so... I mean, they've kind of taken the setting that we're all familiar with, you know, the Cylons are chasing them, and they tell that five-year story or five-season story, and now they have the luxury to go back and tell some of the things that led up to that, like through Kafka and Blood and Chrome.
Hmm.
And they're both adding to the canon. So that could be, if you're just talking about just the game in general, is, yeah, tell that core story of what the game is, and then go back and fill in some holes of the overall history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty fun, yeah.
Yeah, and it can actually offer you a different type of game. Like, I haven't seen Caprica, but, I mean, it's a different type of show.
Mm.
And now that the players are, or the viewers or the players are invested in this story, they might be more willing to watch or play a slower story.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just might... You know, regardless, they just might appreciate the break, you know, and it's like, well, we're playing pilots and now we're playing industrial spies or whatever, you know, it's like, wow, that's, we couldn't have played that in the other setting.
Mm-hmm. A quick shout out to some of the other movies that we, had thought of to look into as, prequels were, Prometheus and, Rise of the Planet of the Apes and, X-Men First Class that we, didn't actually get to, but they're good resources to take a look at.
I think Rise of the Planet of the Apes is a better prequel than Prometheus, because Rise of the Planet of the Apes is kind of the let's explore the legend of how this happened. You know, we've painted broad strokes and now let's just fill in some details. So I think that's why it works.
Mm-hmm.
Prometheus arguably didn't really feel like a prequel.
None of us have anything to say about Rise of the Planet.
Sorry.
Take a breath. No, I agree. I think it hits several, Rise of the Planet of the Apes hit several good points. It gives the players a different type of story.
Right.
Like, compare Planet of the Apes and Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It is a different type of story, both in time and the type of characters.
Mm-hmm.
It is fairly open.
Right.
In that they kind of know what the end is, or the end result is, but they don't really know how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about like players not having a lot of control. You're talking talking about Indiana Jones. It's kind of a not a depressing, you know, why am I even here? Lack of control, like Indiana Jones, maybe, but or lack of influence or impact. But yeah, it's going to happen somehow. But you know, you can influence how it happens or position it. But you know,
it almost seems a little bit like a skill challenge esque thing to me, where maybe you can't full on prevent it, but you can influence how or when it's going to happen, maybe push things back a little bit.
Yeah.
What are some of the other examples?
X-Men First Class. That actually goes in with your point earlier, Lyle, about two people who start off as friends but end up as enemies.
No, that is excellent. It's like, so how does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And the story is constructed to make that happen in that that's done by the NPCs. So the players can do a whole lot and have a whole lot of freedom. And at the end, they're going to be given that dilemma.
Hmm.
Or that choice, and then they kind of know, okay, this is the choice that this guy is going to make. So that's kind of taken out of their hands, but everything else is like really, really open.
Well,
and again, it offers a slightly different timeline. I mean, in our Cortex Pledge, we took an add-on called the Leverage Companions, and one of the things that was really attractive was Leverage Noir. And, you know, we're big fans of film noir and hard-boiled, and, you know, just playing in a slightly different tech level.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can be pretty refreshing. So you're playing with everybody's got smartphones, everybody's got computer, internet, and then you go, okay, how about let's play in the 70s or 60s?
Yeah.
Cool. That's interesting.
No, it would be pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, remember that old spy or that old superhero or that old warrior, you know? I mean, that's not going to work so much in fantasy, and it's like, yeah, let's play 40 years in the past and hey,
things are still the same.
Horses. Yeah. Awesome. Whoa. Oh, is the sword like half a foot longer now? Wow. That really shakes up the story. But when you're talking about something like, yeah, the 20th century where people are familiar with just how quickly the technology changed.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking that,
yeah,
like,
that'd be cool.
If you extrapolate that to like a sci-fi or a future setting, imagine how much different things would be if you jump back the same amount of time. You know, like 20 years in the modern era, you know, you go back 20 years from now and they were still kind of using, what, cassettes and CDs and kind of just come out. But imagine what they would be like in the future. 20 years, be almost like completely different setting.
Yeah, except it'll be really hard to find an example because
we can't,
you look at Star Wars, Star Trek, it's like, yeah, 20 years and it's everything's kind of the same.
Well, no.
Wait, we have swords again?
Yeah,
what?
No, if you do the Star Wars thing, hey, 20 years and hey, stuff was better than what we had. What the hell happened?
Yeah. Yeah, what the heck?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good way to start off a prequel. I mean,
what?
You think
no,
about it.
No, holodeck?
If you start off with like all the old, clunky, dirty stuff that you had in the original Star Wars movies, and then you tell your players we're going to start a prequel, and all of a sudden the setting is much cleaner and sleeker and nicer, then hey, what's going on? Something happened here.
Hey, and you only gave yourself 15 years to figure out how it all goes to crap? Man,
exactly.
you, that's a tall order right there.
Yeah, exactly. The inception in Star Wars is a good idea, but
execution.
Execution.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that ends prequels.
Yes, it does.
And we'll be recording a prequel to this episode next episode. So. All right. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Cool. Sorry, usually
I got like
more snot
like running down my face.
Oh.
I don't have any Kleenex handy. So I'm like,
All right, cool. So we'll finish there because Lyle's got snot running down his face.
Oh, yeah. My nose burns.
Thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, outofredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can leave a comment right there on the episode or you can sign up and post in our forums. You can follow us on Twitter or on Facebook or just send us an email because we always love hearing from all of you. Thanks again and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive-Thru RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG. the one true source for RPGs.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.